Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Harry Douglas with you on a Saturday morning. Glad to be hanging out. It's time for our five Falcons questions for Harry. We do this every week. If you have got a Falcons-related question for Harry Douglas, at 929game, at Chris Goforth 1, at HDouglas83, you can reach out to us on Twitter, on any of those three channels, and we'll try to get your question answered. If we can't get to it today, no problem. We'll hold it. And we'll get to it next week because we do this every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, five Falcons questions for the former Falcon in Harry Douglas. So we'll talk a little bit more, kind of recapping the Falcons draft from last weekend. Matt Manoucherian, a former NFL scout with the Saints and the Browns, he'll be with us to talk Falcons draft coming up in the next segment. Harry, I don't want to start with the draft, though, with you.
Okay.
I'm going to start because I told you last week, you and I talked a lot last Saturday with the addition of Kyle Pitts, what would the Falcons' offense look like? And I told you last week, I said, Harry, we're going to figure out this defense next week. And then our guy Brandon Mincy on Twitter, he says, "All right, HD, I trust that the offense is going to have some act right, so I'm not as worried about them. Defensively, though, what can Dean Pease and his experience bring to the players that are here plus our new ones? Can we just be average year one?"
Ooh, I don't think that's the mindset. I don't think that's the mindset of anybody going into a season, is that you want to be average, because especially when you haven't even seen the offense gel yet and what they can do. So you go into a season wanting to put guys in the best positions to shine. And I think that's one of the things that Bill Belichick has done a great job of, being a coach up in New England, is that, okay, don't tell me about what a guy can do. Tell me what he can do, and we're going to showcase what he can do and try to get him to perform at a high level doing those things. And I think when it comes to Dean Pease, it's basically surveying your roster defensively, seeing what guys do best, seeing how guys can make plays and putting guys in the best positions. Now, one of the things I love about Dean Pease and a lot of guys that I play with that has played for Dean Pease and Dick LeBeau, they say they kind of have the same MO. Not the same, but they kind of have the same mindset, right? They want to be great. They want to do things. They want to be disciplined. They want to do a magnitude of different things. So the offense isn't tipped off on what you're going to do. I think you're going to see some blitz. You may see some blitz in one game. You may see different 3-4. You may see a 4-3. But I think when you look at the depth on this defense, I think it's going to come down majority to these guys up front, right? Tuodi Mariner, Grady Jarrett, Tyler Davidson, Dante Fowler. I can't even pronounce the young guy that just drafted for Notre Dame, his name right, so I'm going to call him A.O. A.O. Marlon Davidson. This is a big year for Marlon Davidson, and he has to step up and make plays for this defense because they drafted him in the spot they did last year to be a difference maker. He's too big not to be. John Kaminsky, I think he's going to have another strong year. This is John Kaminsky's third year, right, going into his third?
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken. So this is a big year for him. DJ Sanat, he has to step up more. Sign Steven Means, who I thought finished the year strong. Taquan Graham from Texas. They're looking for a guy who can play 3 technique, 5 technique. They're looking for him to do some big things. Now, on that D line, you want to have depth, right? Have guys in and out, and you can and you can be fresh. But the more pressure that you can create, and like you said, sack matter. But the more pressure that you can create while containing the quarterback, I think it's going to be better for the linebackers, who I think right now is the strength of the defense. It's going to definitely going to be better for your secondary, who is young. AJ Terrell is going into year two. Isaiah Oliver, I think, is going into what, year three or four. He started off very, very slow last year, but picked it up late in the year. You have Daron Hardman, who's a vet, who I love that signing of bringing him in, him and Eric Harris. And then Richard Grant, a guy who can do a multitude of things, right? From blitzing on the line of scrimmage, from playing that linebacker depth, to guarding your slot receiver, guarding your tight end, playing free safety. A guy you just have as your wild card where Tom Brady comes to the line of scrimmage, and Tom, I think he's going to wear what? What number is Richard Grant going to wear? Number 27? They're going to be like, okay, 27 is there. You know how you used to have, not saying he's an Ed Reed, a Polamalu, but I think he's going to be a guy like Lil Ryan was, that you just have to know where he is because he can do so many different things on the football field defensively. A guy I think going into year two, I believe this is for him, is Jalen Hawkins. He has to be a wild card as well. He has to be able to play significant snaps. And these young corners, Kendall Sheffield, he has to have a better year than he had last year. And then the two younger corners that they drafted. Because in a league where you have Tom Brady, you don't have Drew Brees no more, but we know New Orleans is going to pass the football. We know Carolina, they're going to pass the football as well. But in general, in the NFL, it's a passing league. You have to have guys that can cover. But I don't give a damn who you have back there in your back end. If you can't get pressure on a quarterback from blitzing or with your front four, or if you're in a 3-4 with your front five and those guys, you're going to be in a world of trouble. So it's basically seeing how you can create pressure on the opposing team quarterback so these guys on the back end can shine. That's what you've seen in the past from the Legion of Boom. Those guys getting rushing four guys and getting pressure on the quarterback, now that Legion of Boom can sit back there and be great. Now, not saying that they aren't great players, but a lot of people look even greater when you have a pass can rush the quarterback and the quarterback just throwing the football up.
A pass rush can fix a lot of things.
Oh, it fixes a ton of things.
Yeah, five Falcons questions for Harry Douglas here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So that was one. Now, I'm going to stay with defense for question number two. What positions are lacking on this defense? You and I talked about it all last year during football season, mm-hmm. about how good this and athletic and fast and this linebacking core for the Falcons is. I'm not worried at all about this group of linebackers.
Not at all.
All right. Now, I got some concerns in the back end, and I got some concerns in the front end. What positions on defense are sticking for the Falcons?
I would say I'm not worried about the D tackle position. I'm more so worried about the defensive end positions. Like we just mentioned, Dante Fowler, they signed to a big contract last year. He was non-existent last year. He has to be the Dante Fowler that everyone's seen in Jacksonville, that everyone's seen with the Rams. And then the back end, these young guys on the back end, they have to play well. Because if you don't, then it's going to be touchdown after touchdown, big play after big play like you've seen last year. A.J. Terrell, I thought he had a great year. I say a good rookie year last year. He has to be even better this year. Isaiah Oliver can't start slow. He's another guy that can be a wild card in your secondary. Now, there's three guys that, in my eyes, that you can have be a wild card in your secondary. Richie Grant, Isaiah Oliver, Jalen Hawkins. Those three guys have to be great. And then Kendall Sheffield. Kendall Sheffield has to be better than he was. He was good his rookie year, but he has to be better.
Especially early. You remember early last year, man, he was getting victimized at times.
Well, him and Isaiah Oliver was getting victimized more than anybody. But then it started happening to Sheffield as well. And as a corner, being in that back end, I talked to Inky Johnson about this. He said, man, you got to have a short-term memory, because if you're thinking about the last play, well, here comes another one for a touchdown over your head. If you're thinking about that touchdown, okay, here comes another explosive play over your head. So you at that position, you have to have a short memory. Understand that guys are going to make plays. You just want to limit how many plays that guys do actually make.
Next question. Frank Darby is a great interview, by the way. If you missed it this week, he was on the midday show with Andy and Randy. This is Frank Darby talking about what type of player that he can be.
definitely going to go out there and show I'm the best deep ball catcher in the country. And, you know, that's just how I look at myself. You know, right. I can go out there and tell them I can take the top ball, you know, and just go out there and also show them I can do the intermediate routes and make plays and catch the ball and go and pick up yards after. You know, things that I didn't actually get to show when I was at Arizona State. I'm just really excited to get out there, go to mini camp, and do all of this.
That was Frank Darby on the Midday Show this week. Harry, I think this is a guy that, look, I think he could be a fan favorite. He certainly doesn't lack in self-confidence. He seems like he's a fun kid. Where does he fit into what has become a very crowded Falcons receiving corps now?
Well, one of the things that I do know about Arthur Smith and Dave Ragone and some of the things that they want to do offensively is that they want their wide receivers fresh. If you're on that roster and you're in that room, that's any player. They trust you to go in the game and make a play. I'm telling you, that's one of the things I love about Arthur Smith. And I've had this conversation with him, asking him, hey, why is this player in the game? Why this player not even? And basically, in so many words, he told me, listen, this guy's in the National Football League for a reason, and he's here to make plays. And I believe that everybody can make plays. I trust every guy on this team to make plays. And that's what you want as a head coach and a former player. You love that, because one of the worst feelings that you have is that, okay, coach don't want to put me in because he's going to drag our star player because he feel like I can't make a play. You never want that feeling. Now, Arthur Smith never gives his players that feeling. And Darby, I think he has the physical tools, and I look at who he played for. He played for Herm Edwards in college. So this young man, he didn't play for no slouch. Now, he played for a disciplinarian. Right. Hello! He played for a disciplinarian. So he knows the steps to take, and his mother just passed away in February, man. So he has a chip on his shoulder to be great, to do things the right way, and to make his mom proud, which I know is smiling down on him right now. But I thought that was a clutch addition to the wide receiver room, Frank Darbin. I like his game, and he's been out there in Arizona State where there's nothing but all the coaches basically on that coaching staff had the NFL at some point, right? All right. So I'm looking forward to seeing ways that he can contribute. Now, he's going to have to play a vital role in special teams. But I'm pretty sure he's not going to have an issue doing that, because once you're at this level, I've seen guys play 10, 12, 13, 14 years on special teams. Imagine that, Chris. You get to make a living playing the game of football at the national football at the pro level, playing special teams.
Just Falcons had one of the best ever in Albert Shelley.
Yeah.
Back in the day, Steve Tasker was another guy. Heck, Steve Tasker made a career out of being a special teams demon.
Eric Weems.
Another guy. Yeah.
Eric Weems. Antoine Harris. I played with him in college and in the NFL. And those guys take pride in it. You look at Matthew Slater up in New England. They take pride in it. But let me tell you what's the mindset of once you started making plays on special teams. When coaches, defensive and offensively, when they see you're making plays on special teams, they're going to find a way to get you on defense. They're going to find a way to get you the ball on offense. But that's what these young cats got to understand. When you show up on special teams, that's opening eyes to a defensive coordinator. That's opening eyes to an offensive coordinator. Okay, let's figure out how we can get this guy the ball. You want to know an example? Tyreek Hill in the return game. Tyreek Hill started off doing special teams, Chris.
Something to be said for getting the ball in the hands of your best players.
Yes.
Get the ball in the hands of your best players. All right, we're out of time for our five Falcons questions for Harry. So I'm going to have to hold a couple of these over until next week, including a little bit of talk about the running back position and what that may look like this year for Falcons since they didn't draft one. And he is a former NFL scout for the Saints and the Browns. He's with us next. We'll recap the Falcons draft. How do these guys fit in with the Falcons? We'll get the latest from Matt Manicharian next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Harry Douglas hanging out on a Saturday morning. It is our all football 10 o'clock hour that we do here every Saturday as we head out on the WadeFord.com hotline. Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer. And we welcome in Matt Manicharian. Matt is the Vice President of Football and Research for Sports Info Solutions. He is the editor of the Sports Info Solutions Football Rookie Handbook. It's just about 700 pages of scouting reports. That's all it is. Not a big deal. It's, I tell you, if you are a this book for about, I don't know, the last 3 or 4 weeks hasn't been out of an arm's reach of myself in getting ready for the NFL draft. It's good stuff. Matt's a former scout with the Saints and the Browns, and he's kind enough to hang out with us here for a little bit this morning on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Kind of recap the draft. We'll get his thoughts on some of these guys that the Falcons took. I want to start, Matt, with Kyle Pitts. How do you see Kyle Pitts and his game projecting to the NFL? Can he be this generational talent that people think that that he can be?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you guys for having me on. I love the Kyle Pitts pick. You know, I think that from the beginning, people were thinking of him as a tight end. Then there was all, you know, is he actually a receiver? Is he more? That's what he can do. The fact that we're asking those questions about this guy, and we're not talking about it in a tweener sense, we're talking about the sense that he could be an A-plus wide receiver. He could be an A-plus tight end. They're going to move him all over the formation. I think that in terms of skill sets, it's very hard to find anybody to compare him to. He's an elite, elite receiver, and, you know, you add him there with, you know, hopefully they keep Julio around, and obviously Calvin Ridley's a stud. So you've got weapons there to go for Matt Ryan. And then, you know, the offensive line being a big need on the team, certainly you don't necessarily address that per se with the Kyle Pitts pick. But I think what you do with Kyle Pitts is you dictate matchups in such a way that you do help the offensive line. You do help the running game. Because if you're a defense and you try to keep linebackers on the field to defend Kyle Pitts, you're going to get torched. So you're going to force the defense into nickel as their base just by having Kyle Pitts, and maybe even dime instead of nickel, you know, if that was their base. So you're going to be playing with their personnel, making them smaller so that they can handle your speed, and I think that helps the running game. So I love what he does to the offense. Really, I think, transforms it right away.
Mike, you spoke about the offensive line, and the Falcons decided to take Jalen Mayfield from Michigan in the third round. When you look at Mayfield and you look at this pick, how important was this pick to the Atlanta Falcons in their offensive line? And what do you think some of the things that Mayfield can present to help this this team get the run game going?
Yeah, I think this was incredible value getting Mayfield here in the third round. He's a guy that I think could have gone as early as late in the first round. The thing with him in is you're looking at a guy who's played 15 games, 15 starts in his college career. So, you know, the stats are really good. No penalties, holds or false starts in any of those games. He's a guy that when you turn on the film and you look at what he did in his two starts in 2020, he was absolutely tossing people around. You talk about play strength, grown man strength, and this is a guy who's not even 21 yet. So, you know, the terms of the growth potential, what he could become, I mean, you start to think in terms of some of the really great players on the offensive lines in this league. On the downside, he didn't test great, and you only have those 15 games. So, in terms of the film, you go back, 13 of his 15 starts were in 2019. He wasn't quite the same player that he showed in those two games of 2020. So which Jalen Mayfield are we going to get is the big question. If you get him the guy that can be playing like a first-round type prospect, then this is a slam-dunk, great value pick. If he's the player that was just flashing for those two games, and that's all he is a guy who can flash, then I think he'll struggle with consistency. But, you know, I like him as a third rounder a lot, and I think that you have first round upside with the pick there.
Now, Mike, I want to ask you this one too, the second part to this question. Now, the Falcons decided to take another center in Drew Dahlman as well in the fourth round. They have Matt Hennessy. Matt Hennessy started two games last year. He struggled. What do you think picking Drew with this pick means for Matt Hennessy moving forward?
Well, first of all, I got to correct you. My brother is Mike. I'm Matt.
Okay, my bad. But, sorry.
No, you're all good. But in terms of Dahlman, what he brings is I think he's probably more of a depth-level player. I think he's a guy who can compete for that starting center job, but I think he brings depth. I think he can play a little bit at guard potentially. He needs to improve his lower body strength a little bit. He doesn't have great size to play the other offensive line positions. But this is a guy who has 15 total blown blocks in 22 starts in his college career. That's incredible. He's really been a guy who's been somebody who can be counted on, and he has great football intelligence. So whether it's him playing center and maybe Hennessy moving to guard, or a different way. At the end of the day, you've got to get five good offensive linemen in there. And I think he's got a chance, maybe more of a depth level player, but I think he's got a chance, especially if he can get stronger.
Matt Manicheri, and he is the editor of the SIS Football Rookie Handbook. He's with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You can find him on Twitter at Matt Mano. I think Richie Grant is going to be fantastic in the NFL against the run. Tell me a little bit, Matt, about what this guy can do against NFL competition in coverage.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's a question to be seen. But when you look at this guy, like you mentioned, he gets it done in the run. He's got good ball skills. You talk about a guy with 10 interceptions over the last 3 years, and he's been all over the field, 282 tackles over the 4 years. So he's been very productive in that regard. What I like about him is that he can be versatile. So 24% of the time he spent lined up in the slot. He can come down and play in the box, as you mentioned, and be a good run supporter there. And then he gets, you know, most of the time he's spending is actually on the back end there. So I think as you see NFL coverages start to transform and look a little bit more like college coverages, you see UCF really played with five DBs all the time. You can start to expect the Falcons, as much as they're already doing that, to kind of get into that even more. So I think he'll be used as kind of this overhang defender, one of these Swiss Army knives that we're seeing kind of take over the NFL. And I think that's where his value comes in. I don't think you're going to say, you know, you just stick on that guy right there and he's going to be, you know, glued to somebody like a corner might be when you draft them high. He's more of the guy that's going to bring that versatility and be able to fill lots of different roles for you for all those different pieces that offenses have right now with their running backs lining up in the slot and the way that they're trying to spread the field.
Now, the Falcons didn't decide to draft a quarterback in this draft. They didn't draft a running back as well. What did this draft tell you about the mindset of the Falcons?
I mean, it tells me that they're trying to build their football team, number one, the right way, and number two, around Matt Ryan right now. So they had their opportunities. They could have made a play if they wanted to move up for one of the other quarterbacks. They could have made taken a shot at somebody like a Justin Fields if they were interested in that. The fact that they sat there, they took the best player on the board. They kind of doubled down on what they have. I think that they're evaluating their offense as, you know what, we can shore up a couple of pieces on the offensive line. We've got great receivers and weapons. Add Kyle Pitts, and we think that Matt Ryan can be a top 10 quarterback, maybe even better than that. So there's no problems there. Then let's go and let's fill in the holes on the defense. At the end of the day, we can find running backs in this league. I don't mean to besmirch anybody or begrudge anybody, but there are a lot of guys that can get the ball done as a primary ball carrier, because a lot of times in high school and college, that's where the best ball players go. They get the rock. So there are guys that can fill that role, and you can find running backs that can fit in as long as you have the sort of weapons that you have at the skill receiver positions, the quarterback in place. So I think it's a reflection on their evaluating Matt Ryan and saying he's got a few years left, more than a few years left, and I don't think there's any reason why not. And then you look around at the rest of the roster, and the real needs were up front on the offensive line and then on the defensive side of the ball, and that's really where they went.
Matt Manicheri, and he is a former scout with the Saints and the Browns, spending a few minutes with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Tell us about Taquan Graham, and how do you see him fitting in the National Football League as a defensive lineman?
Yeah, Taquan Graham is a little bit of an interesting guy for us. Let me pull up my notes. Excuse me. I can't do that because we don't have notes on Taquan Graham. He didn't make our top 300 players in the Football Rookie Handbook. So he's one of these rare guys. We get 300 dudes in this book, and he actually was somebody that didn't make the cut. So I can't tell you much more about it. Maybe you guys can tell me a little bit more than I can tell you.
Who, in your opinion, Matt, who had, when you take a look at this league top to bottom, who do you feel like had the best draft last weekend?
There were a couple teams that impressed me. You look at the Dolphins, what they were able to do. They landed our number one receiver, Jaylen Waddle, who's somebody who's absolutely going to take the top off defenses and not just be a deep threat, but be more than that, sort of Tyreek Hill upside. And then they get our number one pass rusher at the edge position in the draft, Jalen Phillips, out of Miami, a guy that they're keeping there. If he can stay healthy, he has the ability to be a starter for them on day one. So really big upgrades there. Really like the way that they built throughout the draft. They also pick up Javon Holland, another safety that we really like. Liam Eichenberg, another tackle that they picked up. So strong things throughout the draft for the Dolphins. I was impressed with that. And, you know, I got to give credit. I didn't see Dave Gettleman trading down all this time and making sure that he was picking up draft picks next year as opposed to this year. And I think that was really intelligent strategically when you just look at how thin this year's draft was and where the kind of future talent goes. Those are two that definitely stand out to me in a positive light.
Who was the biggest head-scratcher?
Yeah, there were a few head-scratchers. I really thought that the Panthers could have been interested in Justin Fields there at number 8, and I think the Bears kind of reaped the rewards from that one by moving up. But then when you started to see the first big time that I was like, really, they did that, was the Raiders' first-round pick taking the offensive lineman out of Alabama, number 17. I thought they had no business taking him there. I thought that was a lower-round player for me, and there was all kinds of value on the board at that point. So that was the first pick that I looked at where I was really like, man, I don't understand it.
Matt Manicheri. And Matt, appreciate it as always, my man. We'll look forward to catching up with you again. And certainly when next year rolls around and it's draft time, we'll be reaching back out. It's always great to get a chance to talk, though. Appreciate the insight.
Absolutely. Have a good one, guys.
All right. Matt Manicheri, former scout with the Saints and the Browns. He is the editor of the Sports Info Solutions Football Rookie Handbook. It's about 700 pages. You heard him say they had profiles in there, scouting reports on 300 players.
Chris.
Yo.
You know why I got his name wrong?
Why?
Because he do stuff for the Saints. That's probably why I got his name wrong. I'm sorry, Matt, man. It won't happen again, baby. I'm sorry.
that's all right. That's all right. Interesting, though, to hear some of his thoughts, especially his take on Richie Grant and also his take on the Falcons' offensive line as well. We'll get to our NFL notebook. The Aaron Rodgers saga just continues. We'll also hear what a former Jaguars legend had to say on both Trevor Lawrence and Tim Tebow. We'll get to that. We continue on. Chris Goforth, Harry Douglas on a Saturday. It is our all-NFL hour this morning. Our NFL notebook's next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Goforth, Harry Douglas. Talk a little NFL football here. It's our NFL notebook. We do it every Saturday morning at about this time. We try to get you caught up on what's happening around the league. Harry, let's start with the Aaron Rodgers saga that just continues to play out in Green Bay. I hear Adam Schefter this week. I think he's on the whatever network it is that he works for. Adam Schefter says, you know, I think both sides are pretty dug in here. I hear Peter King this week on some national shows, and Peter King says, you know, I think both sides they're really dug in right now. Doesn't sound like Aaron Rodgers is willing to back down. The Athletic reported this week that the Packers have made an offer in recent months to Rodgers that would have made him the highest-paid quarterback in the league. What's going to play out here? Because, and we can talk about, you know, what NFC teams would be the best fit for Rodgers. I think pretty much everybody agrees the Broncos and the Raiders would be the two spots, but if you're the Packers, would you rather this guy retire or would you rather trade him if it came down to that?
It gets tricky because I have the mindset, I don't want a guy to retire and then just be done with him. If he's not going to be here, me personally, I'm going to trade him and see what I can get for him. You letting him retire is basically just saying like you're throwing money away. Just say you have $1 million in the bank, right? Actually, you might as well just say, I don't want the $1 million. You're just giving $1 million away. Well, but without some kind of deal going on, like, okay, I give you $1 million. There's a possibility that we can get this back in return if we put it here, right? So I have to get something for him. I have to, and I'm going to be asking for a lot because this is A-Rod, right? He has a Super Bowl win. He's been to consecutive NFC championships. He is
MVP.
The league MVP. Yeah. Not last year, but multiple times. So I will have to demand a lot for him, but there are teams out there willing to give a lot for Aaron Rodgers. I know right now if I'm on a team and I'm a quarterback away from making a splash, I'm giving up everything for Aaron Rodgers.
Man, I thought he was going to get dealt on draft night. I really did. I mean, I thought that was going to happen, and it didn't happen. I don't know if there is – you know, if you and again, he's had some of his former teammates have come out this week. One of them went on CBS Sports Radio. Other guys that were former teammates of his, they've kind of come out and started to talk about this now. I wonder if maybe that isn't if maybe that's not his way of trying to put the information out there, to try to get his side out there, to try to sway the court of public opinion over his way, and try to force maybe the Packers to make a move. I mean, it sounds like the only way Rodgers is willing to come back to play in Green Bay is if they fired their GM.
Basically. But I don't want this to happen on Green Bay's side, right? I'm going to say a word that I think a lot of people struggle with, right? Men, women, business people, all kind of people, right? People of different, whatever, backgrounds. It's pride. I don't want pride to get in the middle of this of Green Bay, and they don't get anything for Aaron Rodgers. They retire from football because I want to see A-Rod play. I like seeing A-Rod with that little smirk. You know that little smirk he has, that little smirk like I got your ass. Like, I want to see Aaron Rodgers on Sundays, Monday nights, Thursday nights, playoff time with that little smirk. You know, he used to do his little belt thing. I used to be like, even though he came in here and beat us at the Georgia Dome, we was number one seed, doing his little belt thing. And I just like the orneriness. I just like his orneriness, man, that he brings to the game, Chris. So the league needs Aaron Rodgers. Because at the end of the day, he is A-Rod, right? A-Rod, and he really doesn't care. He's going to do things his way. We've seen him get into it with Matt LaFleur. He doesn't like the GM. So I want to see A-Rod playing, but I don't want pride to get into the middle of this thing on both sides, and especially the Green Bay Packers letting A-Rod retire and don't get anything for him. Listen, if I'm a GM, if you want to retire, you won't be here, I'm going to get something for you, and I'm going to get a hell of amount of value for you as well.
Yeah, one thing I think is for certain in all of this, if A-Rod's not going to show up for training camp, if he's truly serious about sitting out, Packers are going to have to hurry up and find some quarterbacks, aren't they? They're not going to have enough guys. They're not going to have enough guys to go through training camp.
Speak on it.
Yeah.
Talk
I mean, that's
me.
That's what – they got to find some guys. I don't know, Harry. I mean, if you've ever thought about, you know, making a comeback at a different position, this might be your time, man.
As long as I don't have to go in the game, because I told you, Chris – I was the emergency quarterback here in Atlanta. Matt Ryan went down in Tampa, and then our backup was about to go down, and they say, Harry, you might have to go in. I'm like, shit. I'm seeing what's happening to number one and number two, baby. They don't pay me the big bucks for that. I don't want to be emergency no more.
The NFL Players Association wants rookies to not show up for rookie minicamp or off-season workouts. Is this the right move for a rookie to not do the – okay.
No, and because of the simple fact what you just seen happen to the Broncos player, right? The way contracts are structured, we just seen – I don't want to say the perfect situation. We just seen an unfortunate situation happen to a Broncos O-lineman where they brought the contract into it. Okay, if you're not training and you get hurt at somewhere else – they don't have to pay your money. Man, y'all better take y'all behind up there to them facilities and work out and stop playing around with these people. And on the back end of that, that's why the union should be ran by players like the NBA is. Because, there's nothing against DeMaurice Smith. I'm just saying, like, when you've played this game and you know what guys need and you know what to stand up for, then you can fight for those things. If you haven't done that, why would you sit in there and fight for those things? And that's why the NBA basically get to do a lot of things that they get to do, because you have a Chris Paul who's leading the way. You have a LeBron James and all these guys. You have a Kyrie. Those guys are at the forefront, and they're doing the work versus just letting a lawyer do it.
NFL Players Association had a call yesterday, with their membership, including Tom Brady, who was on this call. Brady told players to have, quote, very intense negotiations with their teams about modifying off-season work. If you haven't followed this story, basically what this is all about, the reason why the NFL Players Association is, you know, veterans are not going to participate in some camps, and they're wanting the off-season stuff to kind of be redone or modified, to use this term, as Brady told players to have, quote, very intense negotiations with their teams about modifying off-season work. Brady said the NFL is the only league with, quote, overly competitive drills in the offseason, and last year showed there is a better way to prepare. A quote from Tom Brady says, there's no effing pro baseball player throwing 95 miles an hour in mid-December.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to lie now. I think I added about 4 years of playing on my body from OTAs. But now saying that.
You added?
Yeah, just from OTAs alone, because I think I've only missed two or three OTAs in my entire career. I played 10 years, Chris. So think about all those extra practices going full speed. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some things that you have to do full speed. Do I feel like it has to be like that every day? No, I don't. And don't get me wrong. It's voluntary, but if majority of your team is there, you want to be there with your teammates building something that can be great. And that's why we were so good while I was in Atlanta. That's why we were so good when I think my last year in Tennessee, because we had that high participation rate of players coming to OTAs and being there in the offseason. But there is better ways you could do it. One day you don't have to be all out running. You could just do your drill work and then, you know, go through walkthroughs. There's different ways to do things. And with the science that we have backing things nowadays, everybody can find a way to do things better without taxing your body.
Fred Taylor, former Jacksonville Jaguar, great player, went on the All Things Covered podcast this week with our friend Bryant McFadden here from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And Fred Taylor weighed in on a couple of things. One, he talked about Trevor Lawrence and kind of the expectations on Trevor Lawrence, but he also talked a little bit about Tim Tebow. Because, you know, Tim Tebow supposedly had a workout as a tight end with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Of course, that's, you know, Urban Meyer, his college coach, is now the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Harry, I think you and I mentioned this last week or whenever it was, that if Tim Tebow would have been willing to play tight end in 2011 or 2012, the guy might still be in the league. Exactly. Now, Fred Taylor said this week that he feels like Tim Tebow did not get a fair shot.
Oh my goodness.
As a quarterback, because this was before the zone reads and the offenses at the NFL level changed up.
Well, that's not necessarily not having a fair shot. You got drafted in the first round to play quarterback. I love Freddie T because I grew up a Florida fan and I used to go watch number 21 run that football at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. So I love Fred Taylor, but Fred Taylor, what you're saying right now is nonsense. He got drafted, Chris, in the first round to play quarterback. So to say he didn't have a fair chance. Now, granted, we can arguably say Vince Young didn't have a fair chance. Like, we could say all these quarterbacks who didn't pan out and could have been great in the zone read. We could say Pat White didn't have a fair chance. A guy who ran it to a T, because I played against him at West Virginia with him and Steve Slayton. So to say that he didn't have a fair chance because of the where the NFL was, that's nonsense to me.
You surprised that nobody took another flyer on him?
No, because he wasn't good.
Yeah,
he was a good college quarterback.
Yeah, no, that was always my take on Tebow, was the guy was a, you know, obviously, I mean, he is as good of a college quarterback as there's been.
An unbelievable person. I love,
yes,
Tebow as a person. Like,
yes, same here. Same
spiritual,
here.
Spiritual, amazing.
Now,
but
as an NFL quarterback, no.
Not at all.
No. Tom Brady, the football that he threw his first NFL touchdown pass with is going up for auction tomorrow. Now, one of, the Deflategate ball sold back in July of 2015 for $43,740. Now, this is his first touchdown pass in the NFL. That ball goes up for sale tomorrow.
Ooh, what do you think? What do you think that's going to go for?
I mean, if the Deflategate ball went for $43,000,
it has to go over 100, right?
6 years ago, I would think Brady, greatest of all time, multiple Super Bowl champion now, a lock Hall of Famer, first ball that he threw his first touchdown pass with in the NFL. Yeah, I mean, I would think it's got to get close to that. I would think it's got to get close to six figures.
Yeah, man, that's Does Brady have the ball or somebody else has the
no,
ball?
No, somebody else has the ball. There's a story. There's a story about this on ESPN.com about the guy who was a loyal Patriots fan when he was in college, bought season tickets in the end zone, and has had season tickets ever since. And when he would go to the games, he, you know, sat in the end zone, and he said that, let's see, where is it? He said it was, let me find it here on ESPN.com, because he said, I stood up on my seat, I pushed my buddy to my left, the other two guys, I handed them my beer in a gentle way, I jumped up, tussled with a group of other fans around me, and came down with the ball.
So basically, he beat up a couple people to get the football.
He said it wasn't until he went to a postgame tailgate when he opened his trunk to show the football off to his friends that one of them reminded him it was Brady's first touchdown. He said he kept the ball in a safe place in his house and even played a very careful game of catch with the football in the backyard. It wasn't until the end of the 2003 season when New England beat the Carolina Panthers in the Super Bowl that the seller knew he had something special. He said after that, he immediately put the ball in a safety deposit box at his local bank, and it stayed there, rarely brought out of safekeeping. He said that the ball became something of a superstition, that he and his friends would take it out the Saturday before each Super Bowl the Patriots appeared in, take a picture of it, and then would send it around to his friends. So, it, you know, neat story for that guy to come up with the football. And again, he's about to cash a big old fat check. Couple of Tom Brady things that are going up for auction tomorrow, if you are so inclined. It's going to wrap it up for this hour. We got one more to go. Third and final hour coming our way with Harry and I. Who's to blame for the lackluster start to the season for the Braves? We'll get into that next. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and the Odyssey app.